It's time for Dr. Laura. I swear she's not gonna bore ya. For sexy advice, you don't have to think twice. Just say you're asking for a friend.
Welcome to Asking for a Friend podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Laura McGuire, an intersectional queer sexologist and doula. Each month, we sit down with a special guest for a thought-provoking conversation on how our sexuality, gender, race, faith, and ability shape our sexual experiences and identities as queer people. Today, we are going to be speaking to Drew Gerza, who is an incredible human being and somebody who I personally call a friend. I've actually been on his podcast, so we're now podcast buddies. Drew, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what makes you fabulous?
That is such a big question. Hello. A little bit about myself. My name is Drew Gerza. I'm a disability awareness consultant. I've been working in the industry around sex and disability for the last 10 years. I'm also the chief disability officer of Handy, a company that's looking to create the first line of sex tech for disabled people. I'm also a giant nerd. I love to sit and watch like hours of Star Trek. It's my favorite thing to do. And I love 80s and 90s pop music. And what makes me fabulous? I just think that I really love to laugh and to be funny and I'm noticing more and more with the pandemic how weird I am. And I mean that in a good way, how like, you know, pre-pandemic with people, I would be so serious and want to put on like a serious face and be so professional. And there are of course still moments where that's appropriate, but the more and more I kind of let myself be as myself this past year and, you know, this probably coming year with the pandemic, I realized that I'm a weirdo. And so I really enjoy just kind of sinking into that part of myself.
I love that. And I think that, yes, embracing our weirdo-ness is wonderful. I used to have a little purse that said on it, weird is just a side effect of being awesome.
I mean, it's not wrong.
It's not wrong. Exactly. So I know you said you do a lot of work around sex and disability and create more accessible tools and books and all kinds of stuff. Can you talk to us a little bit about your work and the intersections of disability, sex, and queerness in particular?
Again, super loaded question. I started my work about 10 years ago, which is really weird to say. I started in 2012 and it's now almost 2022. So just about 10 years ago. And I finished school. I have a master's of legal studies and disability from my alma mater. And I realized I don't want to go to law school. I don't want to do more school. I want to take what I've learned and turn it into something tangible. And I always knew that I was queer and I had been out of the closet since I was 16. So I was like, well, why don't I turn this into a business? And I just started saying, I want to talk about this with people, not thinking that anything would come of it. I literally went on Vistaprint, made up the term disability awareness consultant, which I didn't know what that meant. And that's not true. I didn't make it up. I stole it from somebody that I saw online. I said, that's what I want to be. Great. And so then I started using it and I realized that I wanted to just talk about how disability feels. And that's kind of where my work's evolved into. It used to be, I want to tell you why sex and disability is great and how amazing I am and how I can fuck and how I can do all these things. And so, you know, I would at first want to be like, oh yeah, I'm sexy and disabled, fuck me. And now it's like, no, I want to tell you all the stuff underneath that and how does sex and disability really feel. So my work has evolved from, you can fuck me, I'm disabled, to let's talk about how that feels, fucking me or being with me or spending time with me or creating an emotional connection. So it's really gone through a big transformation from when I first started.
That's incredible. And I think that so many aspects of what you're talking about are things that evolve over time, right? We have these identities, we have concepts around, oh, I want to speak to it in this way. But then over time, we gather data, we have more experiences, and we say, actually, this is growing in a different direction, or it's going in a deeper direction. So one of the things I wanted to ask you in that realm is, you know, you're proud about being a queer person, you're proud about being disabled. What do those identities mean to you? Maybe a little bit more about some of the nuance around that for you as an individual. And then also, how did you come to terms with being proud about that? Because I know a lot of our listeners are going to hear that and be like, oof, I don't know if I'm ready to be open about identifying this way. Or I don't know, I have a lot of hangups around either of those terms and my own experience, right? So how did you get to that place where you're like, yeah, I love this about myself versus, oh, this is something society tells me is negative?
I mean, to be really honest with you, sometimes I haven't gotten to that place. Like, I think it's a falsehood for anybody to, and people say this all the time, they don't mean to. They say it just as plainly as you did, where they say like, how did you get there? And I'm like, oh, I'm there. I didn't realize I was there. I'm still on my way to there. And sometimes I take a detour. And so to say, like, there are moments where I'm not proud of being disabled. There are moments where I fucking hate it and I wish it would go away. And there are moments where I wish I could get up and walk and run and do a cartwheel and just like go to this place or do this thing. And there are moments where, you know, the other piece of the identity you asked me, like, how did I love being queer? There are moments where I don't like that either. For instance, like last night, I went on a dating app or two nights ago, and somebody told me that I should go fucking kill myself because I'm disabled on an app. And so, like, that part of queerness and that really pointed part of, like, you don't belong because you are disabled or you are this, or like, they told me they're going to push me in front of a bus. And I was like, you know, it really hurt me, but I sloughed it off and moved on and I reported it. But there are moments where, you know, my queerness, and I use queer very, very openly in what I do, because I don't feel like me as a disabled power wheelchair using person really can identify with the gay aesthetic. I am not super muscular. I'm not super masculine. And that's really what, unfortunately, the gay aesthetic has meant to be. And so queer for me feels really much more comfortable because it allows me to take a breath and relax and not have to conform to this thing. It'll, queer allows me to be a wheelchair user. Queer allows me to be not this really confined idea of what a same-sex attraction is supposed to be. And so queer feels super nice. And then by way of other identities, this past year, I started using they as a personal pronoun, which was something that I really struggled with, not because I didn't want to use it, because I was worried that I was taking space from a non-binary person or a trans person who may want to use that terminology. And so I felt like, you know, I've always felt kind of othered in my experience. So I decided for myself, and I only can speak for me, but I decided that they, for me, it feels safe when I'm in gay male spaces and I don't fit, or when I'm talking to a gay man and I don't fit. They feels super comfortable because it allows me to be other. It allows me to be different. It doesn't conform me to be what a quote unquote gay man is supposed to be. And it says I can be all those things or none of those things. And it's completely directly related to how you perceive me as a disabled person. And that's why I use it.
I love that. I love that. And I think that also what you said, and I'm so glad you went there with, yes, even when we're these kind of like public figures, right? And people say, oh, wow, look at them. They've reached that goal. They're totally at peace with everything about themselves, right? And the reality is, no, this is a journey. This has ebbs and flows and peaks and valleys. And I think sometimes in any aspect of our identity, we might go into a community of people who share our identity, and we might say, you know what, sometimes this is hard, or sometimes this sucks, or sometimes I'm exhausted by having to live as my authentic self, and there's pushback, right? Oh, why aren't you totally happy about this? You should be nothing but proud, right? Whereas the rest of society gives us these other negative messages. So,
because people think, especially when it comes to queerness, you chose this, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going, no, I didn't. I didn't choose it. So they assume that by us coming out once, we've somehow fixed it. And that's just not true. You can come out multiple ways. I've come out as queer to people, or, you know, I've come out as gay, I've come out as queer, I've come out as disabled, I've come out recently as femme. I've come out as all these different identities because I'm still looking for what makes me feel whole. Sometimes whole and sometimes hole. But, you know, I'm looking for all those things. That was a sex joke, in case you didn't know. but, you know, I think coming out is so nuanced and so much more introspective than just you came out once and that's it.
Yes, absolutely. And again, that's something I think so many of our listeners will relate to, and find comfort in hearing that. Yes, you are allowed to come out many times and be questioning many times in your life and say, oh, wait, I have to go back and really like redefine what labels are working for me at this moment. And in that, I wanted to ask you a little bit about identity and dating, because I know you just mentioned there have been a lot of negative experiences, but I'm sure there are some amazing ones as well. I often hear, you know, the kind of old adage, no one's going to love you, or you can't find love unless you love yourself. And we know that that's like super toxic, right? Like such like a terrible
What white woman named Brittany came up with that? Like, who came up with that? Because it's not true. You're deserving of love, even if you hate yourself. And like, even if you don't love yourself, and who says, okay, now you love yourself. Like who's the decider of that? It makes no sense.
Exactly. Exactly. Since we're saying, yeah, don't go with that kind of framework, that belief system that people promote on social media and stuff, what have you found to be helpful when navigating dating and relationships? And again, being in this process of loving ourselves, being in this process of understanding, accepting who we are, and having times where it's just really difficult. What kind of wisdom, advice do you have for people who are also in that process and trying to understand how they can connect with others when they're moving through these different aspects of understanding who they are?
I would say just be really upfront about how you're feeling every step of the way. I have, because I also live with depression. I have both visible and invisible disabilities. I have depression, not fully diagnosed by people, but I'm pretty sure I do because I get really up and down. So I'm going to say that I'm going to self-diagnose and say that I do. Not a doctor, but I think I do. But, you know, I would say just be really upfront with people about, here's how I'm feeling today. Maybe I don't want to engage today. Maybe I can't. Maybe I want to go on that date with you, but it might be a low day. We might just walk around. Like it might just be, or maybe I can't go date with you today or for a long period of time because I'm feeling X. Or maybe when we go on dates, it feels like this. Like just be really direct about how you're feeling. I also think it's important to, for a lot of disabled people, when they date, especially if they're dating an able-bodied person, they get excited by the prospect of being with somebody who's non-disabled, because we've been taught that if we as disabled people, I'm going to use colloquial terms here, if we bag an able-bodied person, we've somehow done so. Look at you. You got the hot able-bodied person. So like, I think it's important for disabled people to remember that like you can be excited share that with them, but also remember they're one person. To put all your hopes and dreams and all your dating desires on whether you're disabled or not, to do that to one person is a lot for anyone. But I think you just need to be upfront about any internalized ableism you have, any feelings you have as you move through the dating process with somebody, just to lay out how you're really feeling and have conversations about that that are real, even if they're not comfortable.
And you just mentioned a really important word that, again, not everyone is aware of or understands how to, if it's in this context, but ableism. So can you just give us how do you define it? What does it look like to you? How do you explain it to someone who's like, whoa, what did I just hear? I've never heard that before.
I feel like I should record this because you're like the 10th guest you podcast. It's like, what's ableism? It's okay, which is fine. Ableism is the discrimination against disabled people simply for being disabled in favor of non-disabled people or able-bodied people. So when you make a joke about Donald Trump's body and you make a joke about how he's incontinent, that's ableism. When you don't hire the disabled person for a job, that's ableism. When you see, depictions of non-disabled actors in movies playing disabled, that's ableism. It's a system, not just one thing. It's a system of discrimination that keeps disabled people out of sight and out of mind.
Yes. Thank you so much for explaining that. And I think that the more we have to say this over and over again, but that gets out there, it's so crucial to the framework where people are like, oh, I'm being, moving into these spaces of anti-oppression, and they often leave behind ableism in that context. And so it's really vital that gets out there. And when we're talking about relationships too and ableism, I know a lot of stuff that you've also addressed on your platform has been how positive sex work can be for people in the community. Can you talk to me a little bit about your feelings around that? And I also know you've seen some pushback. I've done a lot of work with sex workers too, and advocating for sex worker rights. And that's always where I get the most online hatred is people saying,
oh yeah. The minute I say on my platforms, and I do it quite frequently, I'll say sex work is a part of disability justice. And I put that out a couple months ago, and I literally just made it a one sentence tweet thinking I would get all this love back because people know me. I'm very liberal. I'm very supportive of a lot of things. And I was like, I'm just going to put that out there. I'm going to make no comments about it. I'm just going to put it there, see what happens. Within a couple hours, I was getting tweets from sex work exclusionary radical feminists who were like, how dare you abuse someone's body? If you're paying them for sex, nobody wants you. You're a disgusting, disabled person. And I was getting all that. And I was like, this is so, and I just ignored it because I was like, well, fuck off. And I put a couple of things out there that was like, no matter what you do to me, I'm going to say it loud again because sex work changed my life. And I'm very proud of the experiences I've had with every sex worker that I've had, even the ones where we didn't connect sexually. I'm really thankful they agreed to come. And I'm really thankful for the ones that agreed to come CUM. But I think sex work it saved my life, to be honest. I wasn't having the kind of sex that I wanted. I was trying to meet guys in the abs and being met with comments like, oh, what happened to you? Oh, does your genitals work? Oh, I don't do guys in wheelchairs. Sorry. And I was just getting frustrated. And then one day I popped on a site and I knew it was for escorts. And I was like, well, I don't have a ton of money, but I know I'm depressed and I haven't fucked in over a year. And I just feel like if someone doesn't touch me now, I'm going to I will not be okay. I'm going to just try. And I saved up the money. I saved up $250 for an hour session, hired my current sex worker. Actually, I paid for 2 hours because I was like, I want to spend more time with him. He's hot. So I paid for 2 hours. We got to know each other and we immediately built this friendship with each other, this working relationship of we're going to work together to do this. And he had never been with a disabled client before, which I loved because I was like, great, I get to show you. You're not going to have any preconceived notions about what's supposed to work here. I can guide you. And like that turned me on a little bit, to be honest with you, it really did. And he and I, from that moment, I remember getting really attached to him way too fast. And he had to like gently put down some boundaries and be like, again, I care about you, but we're working together. Like, I'm not your partner. We're working together. So because I'd never been in any kind of relationship and never gone on dates and never been directly told no, because part of ableism is nobody likes to be direct with disabled people when they want to say no. So they'll be like, oh, I like you, but just not like that, or just not in this way. They don't just plainly say like, this isn't going to work. So he very plainly said, I want this to work, but we need to create boundaries. Because I was texting him, I'll be honest, I was texting him like 40, 50 times a day. And he was like, I can't live my life if you keep doing this. I, of course, took it initially as like, oh my God, you're telling me that I'm the worst. But the more I looked at it, he was trying to set up a healthy working relationship. And once we talked that through and he was like, I care about you, but you have to remember that we're working together. It really set out a proper boundary for he and I to, we've now been seeing each other for 4 years as sex worker and client. And so it's something I think for disabled people, if you have the means to, and if you're not, you know, not being touched in the way you want to, or not having relationships in the way you want to, and working with somebody will help you have those interactions in a way that makes you feel safe. And not all sex workers are created equal, so you have to spend your time in finding out who is the one for you. But John and he is such a sweet and gentle soul that I can't speak more highly of him, because when we're together, it's like, yes, we're working, but it's like seeing your friend and we happen to have great sex. And then we sometimes we'll go out and have coffee or go to the grocery store or like be just friendly. And that is that kind of compassionate hanging out time. Yeah, I like to have sex and fuck, and that's great. But like to know that I get to just spend time with a really hot person doing menial stuff, sometimes that's hotter than the sex we're having.
That is so fantastic that you have found that person, and then again negotiate that relationship. That is exactly what you need it to be. And I think so many people would love that, but they have so much shame around, do I deserve companionship? Do I deserve pleasure? Do I have the right to find a situation that works for me, even if, you know, it is sex work? And again, that's something that a lot of folks will say, I love what I'm hearing, but again, religion, family, people have told me this is not something I deserve or should be pursuing, or it's some kind of negative thing about myself, right? So for folks who are curious and want to explore this more, do you have any tips for finding the right situation for you, communicating your needs, and also pushing back against some of the people in their life who might be telling them otherwise?
Okay, the first thing is, can you just repeat the first part?
Yes. So the first thing is just for themselves to finding the right sex worker for them, finding the right situation for them.
Do your research, go online. I'm not going to name the site where I found John just to protect everybody, but look for sites where that stuff goes down and take your time, get to know them, write them emails, explain to them your situation, you know, talk to them about it, explain to them that you may be a person with a disability, physical or otherwise, and you want to explore this. And maybe it's your first time and you don't like really do your homework on the person you're working with. Cause I've worked with workers who've stolen from me, who things weren't going super well for them. So I had to really, when I found John, it was like finding a unicorn in a haystack, because he fit everything that I was looking for sexually that attracted me. But also he was a good human, which was part of the reason why I was like, you're the only, like, he is one of two sex workers in Toronto that I work with. Everyone else, I'm like, oh, you don't fit my needs. But I took my time with him. We talked about stuff. When I first contacted him, I said, have you ever worked with a disabled person before? He said, no. And I said, great. Like, can we discuss it some more? And we had conversations, and I said, are you nervous? He's like, yeah, but I want to do it anyway. Like, it'll be a good experience for me. And we just had a conversation. So I would say, do your homework. Know that maybe the first sex worker you work with might not be the same one. Also consider and make sure you have the financial means to pay them in full, because it's never cool to be like, oh, I have a disability, so I can't pay you in full. Can I pay you half? Like, don't undercut them, because I'm a freelancer too. I know how crappy it is when you're trying to make a living and someone's like, oh, can I only pay you part of that? No, I have done that in the past when I was learning about it. It's not something I do. There are sex workers who, if they feel it's appropriate, can give discounts based on your financial need. But like, that isn't something you should go into expecting. So make sure that you can feed yourself. Make sure you can keep the lights on before you're like, I'm going to drop $250 an hour, because it's $250 an hour on a sex worker. Make sure it's something you can financially do, or save up, or you know, do, like do. I recognize that me being able to hire sex workers is a privilege. It's not something that I did lightly. My first thought was, when I was thinking about doing it, was, okay, this $250 that I'm going to spend, am I going to be able to feed myself after that? Like, am I going to be okay? And, you know, it's like, sometimes for me, the idea of being with a sex worker can be addicting, because you're like, if I pay the money, they'll come and I'll get what I need. But it's like, you have to remember, like, if you're on a fixed income, it's not like, so take that very seriously before you make the decision. But just talk to the workers, and remember, they're human. They may do and say ableist things and not realize it. They may have never worked with a disabled client before and have no idea what to do, or no interest in doing that. That's okay. But just do the legwork.
That is such good advice. And I love that you say, yeah, they're people too, right? They're going to have good days, bad days, things that you need to correct them or educate them on about your needs and your experience. And that's okay. It's going to be just like any relationship. You have to find the right fit. I know you also mentioned in this conversation about, you know, finding what works for you, finding pleasure and connection and any kind of tool that you need to have your needs met. You talked about sex tech and that you are getting into that industry. So I will definitely want our listeners to know more about that and how they can access some of these amazing things that you're creating.
Sure. So I am the chief disability officer of a sex tech company that I created with my sister, CEO and founder, Heather Morrison. And our company is called Handy. I'm also a co-founder. It is a company we created. I was sitting on a beach in Bondi with my sister talking about life. And she says, well, don't you work in sex tech, or don't you work in sex and disability? And I said, yeah. And she goes, well, what about the toys out there on the market? And I kind of rolled my eyes and said, like, Heather, look at my hands. My hands I can't do that. So I explained to her, like, I can't use the average toy because it didn't work. And so we talked some more about it, and I explained some more. And then she said, well, kind of naively said, well, what if we make one? And I kind of rolled my eyes again. I was like, do I want to make a sex toy with my sister? Like, weird. But then we put that question out to the disabled community on like a Reddit poll, just to get ideas if this is a worthwhile, should we try this? And 92% of the people we polled in 2018 said, I want a toy like this. So we started a GoFundMe to get some, like, just some money to start doing the research. And everyone we spoke to about the idea went, oh, wow, that's really, oh, I never thought about that before. So we realized that we had something really special. And so then Heather did testing with people from all over the world in Australia with our team. We spoke with one of the leading sex tech people, or sex toy researchers, Judith Glover out of Australia, RMIT Melbourne, we got a team of OTs and PTs together to design, to look at what toy design would work. So we took it very seriously. And as we were doing that, people would tell us stories about their sex lives. They would say like, oh, I had sex like this, or oh, somebody said the greatest thing about my disabled body today. Here's what they said. And we realized that all these stories, nobody was talking about this elsewhere, really. And we were like, well, we could turn these stories into a book. And so we decided that we were going to create a book called The Handy Book of Love, Lust, and Disability, which is amazing because it's 50 people with disabilities from all over the world talking about how sex and disability feels. So we asked them questions like, what was the best disabled sex you ever had? What was the worst disabled sex you ever had? How does sex, disability, and chronic pain interlap? How does all that feel? And so I got to contribute and I got to write down things. And some of these questions that we were asked were things I'd never been asked before. And I've been working in this industry for like 10 years. And it was so eye-opening for me to, as a contributor, then to see 49 other people also write similar stuff and completely different experiences from mine was like, this is incredible. This is going to be a resource for non-disabled people to pick it up and go, oh, I never realized that. But most importantly, it's going to be a resource for disabled people to go to their local book, their local sex store or sex shop or gay bookstore or disabled store and see this and go, oh, it's my experience. Here it is on the page. And so we're really excited about that. So with every book, and you can go to www.thatshandywithanI.co to order one. With every book, every single cent that we make from the book does not go to us. It goes into the production of our toy. So everything we do goes back into the toy, which will go out to the community. So we're not doing it to be like, oh yeah, we're going to make all this money. We're doing it because we realize there's a need for this kind of change. We need to be having these conversations. We should have been having these conversations 50 years ago, but we didn't because we weren't there yet. Now we're there. And it's kind of disturbing that in 2021, it's the first. What do you mean? It's like, it shouldn't be, but it is. And I'm proud of that, but also kind of shocked by that. And so I'm really excited about the book because that'll open up conversations and that'll help to dismantle ableism. And the toy, when it's ready, hopefully within the next, you know, a couple months, we'll be done prototyping. I don't know because COVID threw a wrench in everything, but hopefully when it's ready, we'll be ready. And then we'll have a toy ready for you. It's called, also the toy is called the Joystick, which we took from, you know, me being a power wheelchair user and so many of us using joysticks, and we thought it was funny and kind of like a nod to that. So I'm really excited about it.
I'm excited about it too. I think, yes, it's so, so long overdue. And also I love the book. I have two copies of your book.
Yay.
And,
thank you.
I know. But it's incredible. And I use it. I teach graduate level sex therapists and sex educators. And I love using that versus just like kind of the traditional textbook, which is like, oh, here's research about people's experiences. Well, instead, let's just read actual people talking about their actual experiences, right? That's so much better. We have had such an incredible conversation today, and sadly, we are about at time. So
wow, we're already there. Wow.
I know. It flies by.
Wow. Okay.
So I have one more question for you, which is, what is the best sex or relationship advice you have ever received?
It's a loaded question. What's the best sex or relationship advice? I would say it's the advice that I've been giving myself lately, which is just access your weirdness and just be weird and be honest and like, and I wouldn't even say be yourself because be yourself feels so like cliche and weird, but I would just say be honest about what your needs are, be honest about what you can do, be honest about what you can't do, talk about what you want to do, even if you can't do it. Just have a frank conversation, even if it's hard. it's necessary, especially when you're disabled. And when you're disabled to the level I am, I can't run from my disability. Quite literally, I can't. So might as well talk about it.
That is beautiful, fantastic advice. I think everybody can learn so much from. I know people are going to listen to this, and if they aren't already a huge fan of yours, they're going to say, how do I become a super fan of Drew? Because they're amazing. So how can people find you? How can they connect with you?
They can connect with me at www.drewgerza.com. My website. I don't go on there very much anymore. That's kind of a landing page just to find out who I am. But you can, I'm really active on the social media, Twitter and Instagram at Drew Gerza. You can also support my podcast, Disability After Dark, which is available on all podcast platforms. You can also become a super fan of that show if you want to, and down and become a Patreon supporter, patreon.com/disabilityafterdark. You can, of course, buy the Handy Book of Love, Lust, and Disability at thatshandy.co. Buy a million copies if you're able to. Also, just going to throw it out there, if you want a book like this in stores, tell your local bookstores about us. We're looking to partner with bookstores, you know, in the US and Canada and all over the world to try to get the book out there more, because it's great that you can buy it from our site, but we also want you to be able to walk or roll into a bookstore and see it there. So if you have a favorite bookstore that you like, oh my God, this should be here, let us know. You can email me at andrew@thatshandy.co. Let me know about it. And we'd love to be in touch with the organizers and the buyers and all those people that do that stuff, because we want to get the book out there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening, Curious Queeros. Join us next month for an all new episode. Until then, stay safe. Love yourself, and remember to be the change you want to see in the world. Asking for a Friend is a Spectrum South podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Laura McGuire. This podcast is produced by Danny Benoit. Keep up with the latest episodes on iTunes, Spotify, and at SpectrumSouth.com. For sneak peeks and to submit your questions or suggestions for future guests, follow Spectrum South on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.